Can you remember a time in your life when you felt like you were totally in sync with another person, where you could almost anticipate what they were going to say, or you began to say things at the same time? This is the state called rapport, and we've all experienced it in our lives at various times. What I'd like to do in this session is have us discover what rapport is, how it's created, and how we can use it to produce great results in our life right now. I'm sure there have been times in your life when you've tried to communicate with someone and there was just no feedback, there was nothing there. Or you've had conversations where you began to speak about something and then all of a sudden something clicked and the relationship changed. That change, that connection, that shift is what rapport is all about. I've stated several times in this program, and I'll state again, that no matter what it is that you want to achieve, create, manifest, or develop for your life, there is a resource called other human beings which can help you to achieve that outcome much more quickly than by yourself. In order to really have the resources of other human beings available to you, you first must be able to find out what their needs are and fill them. And before someone's ever going to tell you what their real needs are, you need to have rapport, that state of responsiveness. Now, the exciting thing about rapport is it's one of the most powerful tools on the planet, and yet it's also one of the simplest. It's one you've already mastered to a certain extent. I mean, if I asked you right now, if I said, go out and find someone in a restaurant and develop rapport with them, you probably could figure a way to do that. In fact, you've done it most of your life. The question is, how do you do it? Let's discover consciously how you do this so you can do it more consistently. How does the average person develop rapport?
How would you go about doing that? Mostly would you leave here, you go find a person, you begin to start a conversation, most likely, wouldn't you? And you try to find something in what?
Common.
How many of you try to find something in difference in order to develop rapport? No, you're crazy, of course not. So you try and find something in common, okay? Commonality is the foundation for rapport. In fact, let me give you rapport in two phrases that will boil it down. A lot of people teach rapport in about a 4-week course. Let me give it to you in two phrases you won't ever forget. Real simple. Write down phrase number one. When people are like each other, they tend to like each other. It's that simple. When people are like each other, they tend to like each other. Commonality, a common bond. Isn't that what rapport is built from? That's what links people together. Here you are in a conversation, right? You're talking back and forth. There's no real magic. There's no real connection. All of a sudden, somebody says, oh, yeah, I go skydiving a lot. You go skydiving? Oh, I skydive? You're kidding. Where do you go? And all of a sudden, there's this new energy, right? Or you're talking along and nothing's happening. And they go, well, yeah, the other day I went over and did this. Or the other day I met this person. You go, oh, you know John? I know John. That's amazing. Oh, yeah. Used to be in the Army? Oh, yeah, I was there too. Whatever. How many of you have had that experience where all of a sudden there's that connection, and all of a sudden the conversation takes on this new energy? And a connection comes from a sense of what? Commonality. So this is the bond. In fact, try this. Think of somebody you really, really like a lot. Now, raise your hand if this person is either like you or like how you would like to be. Let me see your show of hands. Yeah, we get the whole room. Because that is what makes them attractive, that level of commonality, that sense of connection, that common bond. Now here's the challenge though. How do most people try and develop this rapport? Most people try and do it through a conversation, and yet we learned that only 7% of any communication is developed through the what?
Words
that we use. Only 7% is words. So when you're trying to go out and have a conversation and develop rapport, which is how 99.9% of the United States tries to consciously develop rapport, you're using the smallest tool you have available. Words are the weakest way to develop rapport. They take the longest. It's hit and miss. How do you do it with words? What kind of things do you say to try and find a way to develop rapport? What do you do? Tell me. What do you ask a person? What do you tell a person? What do you like to do? So hoping they'll say something you can connect with. What else? What's your sign? Boy, I thought that one was gone years and years ago. What's your sign? What else? What type of work do you do? Okay. What else? Where do you live? What's your home phone number? What else? Musical taste. So all these things, you're searching with words, aren't you? You aren't guaranteed a connection, are you, when you use words? But is there a way you could guarantee that they had a sense, at least at the unconscious level, of total common bond with you, commonality? And of course there is, by using the other two major tools, by duplicating their tonality, using voice, and by duplicating their physiology. Now you got the 38% and the 55% working for you. See, what Bandler and Grinder, the originators of NLP, found was the most successful people in this culture had one major ability that stood out amongst almost any other ability they had. And that was the ability to develop this binding rapport, a real bond with anybody they met within a few moments. And they found the way they did it was by doing something they called matching and mirroring. Matching and mirroring. In essence, what they were doing was they were mirroring or duplicating the tonality of the person they were talking with. They were duplicating the tempo. They're duplicating basic posture. And so what happened is, on the largest level of communication, on 93% of it, they were just like that person. That person totally trusted them in a few moments, even though they may not even said but a few words. Okay? So it was incredible that they began to notice. And you know what? Everybody does this. Matching and mirroring simply means they create a rapport with people by mirroring or matching either their tone of voice or the key words that the person used or the tempo at which they spoke or their physiology, their posture, their breathing pattern, their facial expressions, etc. For example, if you came in to see Dr. Milton Erickson, one of the greatest hypnotherapists that ever lived, one of the ways he would develop that relationship of trust with you is as you sat down, he would immediately sit in a posture very similar to your own. He would mirror it and begin to breathe at the same pace at which you were breathing. He would use similar tonalities in many cases. This would cause you to feel like he was just like you and create within you a feeling of trust, respect, and relaxation. So what are the elements? Well, there are many elements. We can, of course, mirror a person's beliefs. That is, share beliefs that are similar, values that are similar, and that's very powerful. But those, again, are hit and miss. You don't ever have to miss again. You can develop rapport with anyone simply by mirroring their tone of voice, their tempo, their timbre, some of the key words they use. For example, if you get around someone who's constantly talking about the importance of values and human development, if you use those words in talking to them, you're going to develop a certain level of rapport. You're going to have even greater rapport, though, if you speak in a tone of voice similar to their own. You're going to have even greater levels of rapport if you sit similar to them as well. When you begin to mirror another individual, you become almost like a biofeedback mechanism to them. They create a movement, you create a similar movement. They use a certain tone of voice, you use a similar tone of voice. It's extremely soothing, and it opens people up almost instantly. We also can mirror physiology. You can mirror a person's posture, their muscle tension or their relaxation, their facial expressions, the amount of eye contact they use. Some people stare at you for very, very long periods of time, directly in the eyes. If you don't look back for long periods of time, you lose a certain amount of rapport. Other people, if you stare in their eyes for long periods of time, they don't do that, so you're not like them. So with people who do not keep eye contact for a long period of time and who use a brief eye contact, you want to use a brief eye contact. You can also notice if people touch, and you can touch similarly. You can notice how close do they get to you when they talk and use the same kind of distance or proximity, mirror proximity as well. There's virtually almost no limit. One of the most powerful things to mirror is breathing. When you breathe like another person, you begin to feel exactly like they feel. But know that there are no limits and that physiology you mirror will develop rapport for you almost instantaneously. This also works cross-culturally. Even when you can't speak the language of another individual, if you use the same physiology, the same tonality in speaking, you can develop rapport in other countries. When you mirror another person's physiology, if you do it accurately enough, you will literally send the same messages to your brain as that person is sending, and you'll produce the same exact emotional state. Matching and mirroring is so powerful. Because when you begin to use your mind and body the same way another person does, you begin to feel the way they feel. You truly develop empathy as well as the connection of rapport. In fact, in our seminars, we usually do an exercise to demonstrate to people how powerful this simple tool of matching and mirroring is. What I often do is bring two people to the front of the room. I have one sit down and think of a time in their life when they had intense feelings about anything. The feelings can be positive or negative, it's their choice. I then have them sit the way they'd be sitting and feel the way they were feeling back in that time. So they adjust their physiology and they sit a certain way. For example, in one particular case, I can remember a man who began to sit forward with his left hand on his left knee, leaning forward as if he was staring at something. His jaw became locked, the muscle tension in his neck increased, and then I began to ask people in the audience to tell me by looking at him what state he was in to see if they could come up with a word that described the state he was in. Well, some people said he was frustrated, some said he was upset, some said he was angry. He said none of those were true.
So then I have another person come up on the stage and sit right next to him. That person's job is to mirror this man exactly. That is to take on the exact same physiology. So that person sits in the chair with the same tilt. That person moves their left hand and puts it on their left knee. That person creates the same muscular tension in the jaw. That person matches the exact same breathing pace at which this person breathes. That person begins to create the same eye focus or defocus that this man has. Once these people are in the exact same physiology, they're breathing at the same rate, their muscular tension and relaxation is the same, they're in the exact same physical position, then I go to the person who's doing the mirroring and I ask them to give me one or two words to describe the state that they're feeling at that moment in time. I then ask the original individual what feeling they're having, and about 98% of the cases, the word is exactly the same. This is quite phenomenal when you first give people an opportunity in the audience to try and guess, and they have no ability to do so, and yet this person who's mirroring them immediately knows the right word to describe exactly how the person's feeling. In most cases, we can go a step even further at this point, and that is we can ask this individual who's mirroring the person who went into state, I can ask them, what are you seeing, or what is this man doing? In about one-third of the cases, they can tell you in detail what the person's seeing. For example, in this case, the woman turned and said, it's really weird because I never watch TV. And all of a sudden, this man's face just dropped. And she said, what's even weirder is I hate sports. And she says, I'm watching the Super Bowl. This man was exactly doing that, watching the Super Bowl in his mind. We have dozens of examples like this on videotape. If you send the exact same message to your brain by using your body in exactly the same way, you're going to get the same pictures, you're going to get the same feelings, and you're going to get some of the same emotions as well. We not only do this from the front of the room, but we have every single person in the seminar participate in this. 100% have the experience of sitting next to someone without ever speaking a word and knowing exactly how they're feeling. Approximately a third will actually see what that person is seeing as well. Well, how do you explain this from science? About 6 months ago, Omni Magazine did an article on a new device that's been developed where they can put electrodes on your head, and before you speak a word, right before you speak it, they get a printout of the word you're about to say. The reason for this is, in order to say a word, you have to send messages through your nervous system, and that translates into electrical impulses. By learning to mirror someone, we're learning literally to tap into the same thought processes without ever speaking. The other incredible thing that happens when two people mirror each other is that they feel totally connected. When I ask these people, how long does it feel like you've known each other? The average amount of years I'll hear is at 10 years. Some people say, I feel like I've known this person my whole life. Bear in mind, even when I've asked them this question, they still have never spoken to each other verbally, and yet they feel that connected because they feel like this person is just like them. This has tremendous power, and yet it is so simple. It's something you can go out and do right away, and I challenge you to do this for your life. I challenge you to go out this afternoon and mirror someone. Let me give you an example of how I use this myself in business.
Nutrition business with the partners I mentioned earlier, right? Harvey Marilyn. These two people were my partners, and they were approached while I was out of town one time by this doctor who wanted to do this certain business project with us. And so he went to them, started talking with them, said, okay, great. Here's what I want to do. I want to do this and this and this with you guys. And I said, well, look, you're going to have to talk to Tony because Tony runs the business. We just do the seminar. So he said, look, I don't want to talk to some 21-year-old kid. You can imagine the rapport he was building with me, right? He said, I want to talk to you guys. And they said, well, look, you know, we're open to it, and you're going to have to talk to Tony because he'll make the final decision with us. So sure enough, you know, I come into town about a week later, and they said, hey, Tony, this guy came to see us, and we don't really want to do what he's asking. And at the same time, if we don't keep rapport with him, he's the kind of guy that could create a lot of problems. And he probably would. He's kind of spiteful. So I said, no problem. All we need is rapport, and then it'll be handled. He said, well, I don't think you're going to get rapport. I mean, he doesn't want to meet you at all. From what his secretary said, he's not even slightly interested. I said, look, he wants to do business with us. He'll meet with me. He said, yeah, but he's not going to like you. I mean, he's already upset that he even has to deal with you. I said, don't worry. I'll just get rapport. They said, how? I said, I'll use my new NLP tools. I was just learning NLP at the time. So sure enough, I go to see this guy at his office. And it's this power trip, right? You walk in, he's got the desk, you know, did any of you read the book Power? He's got the whole thing arranged a certain way, and he's sitting behind his desk like this. So when I walk in, guess what? I sit down in a chair just like this. And he goes, so you're Tony Robbins of the Diamond Method, huh? And I went, that's right. Now, some of you are going, oh my God, the guy's gonna think you're mimicking him. Hey, you know what you need to realize? That most people, when they're talking to you, are not talking to you. They're in trance. They're talking to themselves. They're not there. They're talking in their own head, especially when they're angry. They're inside. You know what blows me away is that people actually go and spend weeks and weeks of their time to learn to become hypnotherapists. To me, there's no bigger joke. The question is not, can you get people in a trance? The question is, can you get them out of trance? Most people drive in trance. These taxi drivers blow my mind. Coming from other parts of the country, they come in there, they don't even look or anything else. They're just driving in a trance, you know? They know where everything is at the unconscious level, you know? See, that's the only way. So most people are in a trance. They don't notice most of what you do. So you don't have to mirror everything to have rapport. But you'd be surprised what you can mirror that you'd think other people would see and they don't notice it. This is happening all the time. All that happens is when I mirror him in the exact same way, his unconscious mind goes, he's just like you. Because I'm putting out the same kinds of signals, which makes him like me. So then he goes, he's sitting like this, right? So then he goes, well, I've been trying to reach you for 2 weeks. And I said, thank you so much for your persistence. Right, and his brain went, he's like you. I mean, all of a sudden there's this connection, right? All he knows is he's liking me, even though he's angry, for some reason. So now the neat thing about rapport is he's talking real loud, so I'm talking real loud. Once you have enough rapport, you can change slightly. And if you have enough rapport, they will follow you. You actually what we call pace them. That is, you enter their world by pacing them, by being just like them. And then you make a slight change, and oftentimes, most times, if you have strong enough rapport, you will lead them. That is, they'll follow you, okay? You've all had this experience. How many of you had a friend over you had a lot of rapport with? It's late at night, you're not tired, they are, and all of a sudden they go, and you go, no, no, don't. Because sure enough, you weren't tired, but all of a sudden, what are you doing? You're yawning. How many of you have had this experience? So you've all had the experience of having so much rapport that somebody led you, or you led somebody else. So all you want to do is do it consciously. So here I am developing rapport with this guy, right? He's talking real loud, so I'm talking real loud too. Pretty soon I'm getting tired of yelling. So finally I said to him, I said, you know what? And he went, what? Right? So I sit back in my chair, and guess what he does? Sits back in his chair. So I cross my right leg over my left. Guess what he does? He tries to do the same thing, except there's a desk there. So he goes, thump. So all of a sudden, for some reason, he doesn't know why, but he feels like turning his chair. So he turns his chair, right, and crosses his leg over. Now, this happens to you all the time. You don't usually go, why do I want to move my body? Someone must be pacing and leading me. But that's actually what's happening many times. All you know is you have this urge to change. You don't question it. You just change your physiology. Okay? So now we're sitting here talking at the same pace. Everything's going fine. And he says, hey, could I take you to lunch? I mean, this is the same guy who wanted various parts of my body destroyed earlier. That was his secretary's description. So the bottom line is, here we go on our way to lunch, and I'll never forget what he says to me. We're driving to lunch, you know, and he just loves me now, right? And he says, Tony, I don't know what it is about you. He said, but I feel like I've known you for years. Why does he feel this way? Because I'm just like him. And he starts telling me how intelligent it is, how obvious it is, how intelligent I am, and all this other stuff. Because he thinks who's intelligent? He is. I'm sending the same signals out. He's receiving them, saying, oh, it's pretty obvious this guy's incredibly intelligent. So at lunchtime, I finally told him what I did. That really blew his mind. And I explained to him how it worked. See? So rapport skills come from matching and mirroring. And remember, you don't have to do it all to have rapport. The point is simply this. If you become like another person, they will like you. And you now have a way to become like anyone, regardless of your background, regardless of your education, regardless of how much or how little you know about a person. You have an infallible way to link up with other people. Now, the question that immediately comes up when I share this is some people say, well, what if the person's agitated? What if they're upset? What if they're angry? Should I mirror that? Well, you might want to break a person's pattern rather than escalate it. There are, however, situations where it might be useful for you to be able to mirror somebody who's in an intense state. Rapport doesn't just mean somebody likes you. Rapport means a state of responsiveness. I know growing up in the streets, there are certain groups of people that you wouldn't want to develop rapport just by trying to be nice to them. If they got very angry with you, part of how you developed rapport or responsiveness is you got just as angry back. You got right into their face. That was how rapport was developed. People had respect for that. So mirroring, even in that case, may be useful sometimes. An alternative, of course, is to break the pattern someone's in. If they're very upset, you might want to change their state first, then begin to mirror them again. The other point that this brings up is that you got to be careful about who you mirror.
See, if you go and mirror somebody who's real depressed to get rapport, that may not be your best approach, because pretty soon you'll start feeling depressed. Make a note now in your mind that you don't have to mirror everything about a person to develop rapport. You can mirror just their gestures and maybe their tone of voice, maybe their facial expressions and some of their key words, their posture or their leg positions. If you'll mirror people, though, that linkage will be there. If you mirror everything about a person, you'll know their thoughts. That's far from necessary to develop rapport. To develop rapport, you only need to mirror a few things. So my challenge to you is to go out today and mirror someone. If you have a personal relationship, a spouse, boyfriend, or girlfriend, or a child, a very powerful experience that you can do together is have that person think of a deep emotional state, a deep feeling that they've had at some point in their life, and then sit next to them and take on the same breathing pattern, the same posture, same muscular tension or relaxation, same head tilt, same eye position, everything the same. And you may have an experience for the first time of your life of really knowing exactly how that person feels. I did a seminar the other day, and we had a young man and his mother who had not talked for many years. And they sat down and did this process together. He still wasn't speaking to her, but he was through his body. And she experienced for the first time the frustration, the challenges, and the love that he felt for her. She fully, really experienced it. We've all heard the phrase, if you want to affect another man, walk a mile in his moccasins. This is the most specific way I can share with you of actually doing this and knowing how human beings feel and creating that unconscious connection. Now, what about times when you can't mirror physiology? Can we develop rapport over the telephone? Of course we can. All we have to do is mirror the auditory aspects of human communication. Even though we as human beings have 5 senses that we can use to experience the world, we don't always use all 5 of these. In fact, most of us specialize or prefer to use one of these 5 senses to experience our world even more than others. For example, some people are more visually oriented. What's more important to them is how things look, what they can see, what they can examine. For other people, it's what they hear, how things sound. For other people, it's the feelings. Now, we have access to all of these, but once again, one seems to become a preferred sense. Just as if you're right-handed, it does not mean you don't use your left hand. It simply means that using your right hand is your preference. People do the same thing, and you can identify these people by the way that they communicate. For example, people who seem to prefer using the visual aspects of their nervous system have a tendency to talk very, very rapidly. They use words like, picture this, examine this, look at this. They have high staccato voices. They don't care how things sound because they're just trying to get it out because they got these pictures, and pictures worth 1,000 words. They get it out as fast as they can. If you remember Federal Express commercials, you know what I'm talking about. Other people are more auditory. They use words like, listen to me, hear what I'm saying. That clicks for me. And they have more resonance to their voice. They're more articulate. They're more selective about the words that they use. And so you can notice in this tape program how when I'm putting things across in a visual fashion, I talk much more rapidly at those points. I'm talking more auditory, I have more resonance, I have more bass, and I've got more of a balanced tempo. Then there are some people who are more, kinesthetic or feeling oriented. And those kind of people, they need to get a sense of things and need to feel it out. And they need to get concrete examples. And there's a big difference between them and auditory people who speak at a different kind of pace and use words like, listen to me, hear what I'm saying, that clicks for me. Or visual people talk more rapidly, many times higher staccato voice, they get things out as quick as they possibly can and move much more rapidly. So by understanding these distinctions, you can see where you can develop rapport and maybe where you lost rapport in the past. For example, what do you think happens when a visual and a kinesthetic person get together? The visual person's talking very rapidly like this, and the kinesthetic person's going, God, would you slow down? Or a kinesthetic person's talking real slowly, and the visual person's going, God, would you speed up? They don't feel like they're like each other, and it causes rapport to be a little bit more difficult to create. Now, they can still do it through matching physiology or having similar values or similar friends, but they would have a greater level of rapport if they matched each other's modes.
I remember I went and did a television interview not long ago with this one television psychologist. You have those guys in New York? In Hollywood, in Los Angeles, and now they got these psychologists who become famous now, and they get up and do their little stuff on TV. They used to confine them to the radio, but unfortunately it's grown. And the bottom line is this one psychologist, you know, is gonna interview me, right? So I sit down, and we're before the interview, before the cameras are there, and he says, well, Mr. Robbins, tell me, what is neuro-linguistic programming? I said, well, neuro-linguistic programming is the science of the effect of language, both verbal and nonverbal, on your nervous system. Your ability to do anything in your life is your ability to manipulate your own nervous system. The more effective you are in directing your mind and body, the more effective you will be in generating any result you desire for your life. And he said, well, sir, it's obvious that you're a professional and you really know your business. And I said, thank you. Now, why do we have so much rapport? Yeah, because I'm in what state with him? What state? Auditory. No, not kinesthetic. Listen to the tone and the resonance. Kinesthetic wouldn't talk about it. Kinesthetic people go, well, Mr. Owens, what is this neuro-linguistic programming? Versus he said, well, Mr. Robbins, tell me, what is neuro-linguistic programming? You hear the difference? Okay. So I spoke in auditory just like him, so we have this tremendous rapport. Immediately he respects me and knows I'm a professional. Because I'm like who?
Him.
So then, it was supposed to be an 18-minute interview. All of a sudden, the producer walks in and says, I'm so sorry, we're late. We had a bunch of people that went too long. You were the last person on the show. It's going to be about 3 minutes instead of 18. I'm going, you've got to be joking. He said, no, I'm sorry. I really apologize. Maybe we'll have you on another time, but you only got 3 minutes. So now, I've got a lot of information I want to get out. Instead of 18 minutes, I got 3 minutes. What pace, what mode do you think I'm going to pop into? Visual. So sure enough, we get on camera. He's sitting next to me here, right? And he says, well, Mr. Robbins, what is, and I'm going 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, I'm counting the seconds off, right? He goes, what is neuro? I'm going, come on. Linguistic, come on. Programming. And I go, well, neuro-linguistic programming is the science of the effect of language, both verbal and nonverbal, on your nervous system. Your ability, Dr. Rader, to do anything in your life is your ability to manipulate your own nervous system. The more effective you are doing that, the more effective you'll be at directing any aspect of your life. And he went, excuse me, on camera. He went, excuse me, but I don't think you realize it, but nobody speaks like you speak. You might want to slow down. And I said, well, actually, some people speak more like you do. And I said, we teach people how to enter people's worlds and how they use their nervous system. You're what we call auditory in nature at this time. Some people are more visual. They talk more rapidly like this. And he went, there you go again. And I said, and some people are more, I don't have time to show you. So, but they're very kinesthetic, and which means they're more into their feelings, right? And so I started to speed up again because I had, you know, about another half minute left, and I'm starting to speed up. And he went, excuse me, but are you like this all the time? He said, are you like when you're with your girlfriend or when you're with your wife? Are you like this? I said, of course. I said, come here, honey, let's make love. Next. I said, of course not. I said, I have choices depending upon the outcome that I desire, right? That's what I enter into, okay? But he just couldn't handle me going individual. He couldn't handle it all. Too foreign for him. Now, realize there are no visual people, auditory people, or kinesthetic people. We're always changing moment to moment. But there are tendencies. And as long as you're paying attention to where people are in the moment, you can match them and you can develop that rapport immediately. I've used this matching of tonality to make a major difference in some of my business partnerships. I remember one partnership in particular where I got along extremely well with one partner, but not quite as well with his wife. The primary challenge, of course, was at that time of my life, I lived in one mode, visual. Everything was moving fast, talking fast, pushing fast, drawing fast, doing everything I possibly could at that incredible speed. I still have that tendency. I'd also have the ability to change and adapt and be flexible. That time, the woman was extremely auditory, the woman I was dealing with. And so I would come along and go, hey, take a look at this, take a look at this, picture this, let me show you this. And I drew it real fast, and then I go, how does that look to you? And she would respond by saying, well, it just doesn't sound right to me. And I'd say, sound right? Look, examine, picture. And she'd say, no, I'm sorry, it just doesn't click for me. And I'd go, click? What are you talking about, click? Can't you read? And she goes, well, I've got this voice inside of me that just keeps telling me it's not right. And I go, voice inside of you? Do you need to go to a funny farm? How many times do I have to draw this? How many times do I have to show you this? And there was a tremendous lack of rapport, as you can imagine. Well, one day I found out about how people communicate. See, we got along on subjects,
but the way I was communicating them were creating problems with us. So one day I realized the challenge was I was in visual and she was in auditory. And so instead of going and seeing her and my other partner, as I'd done almost every day, I realized that's what I needed to do. I needed to see people face to face because I was primarily oriented towards visual things at that time. But what she needed to do was she needed to hear from me. So what I decided to do was call her up on the phone and use an auditory tone of voice. So I called up the phone and went ring. She said, hello. I said, hello, Marilyn. She said, who's this? I said, this is Tony. She said, Tony who? I said, Tony Robbins, your partner. She said, Tony, are you okay? And I began to laugh and I said, I'm absolutely fine. I said, I was just calling to talk to you. Notice the words, calling and talk are auditory words. I was just calling to talk to you about how things are going. I said, tell me about it. She said, are you sure you're okay? I said, I'm sure. She said, well, I talked to this person today and we did this and we did that and I tried this and I tried that. She went on for several minutes and I said, you know, Marilyn, it sounds like things are really clicking along. Notice the words sounds and clicking are both auditory words. She said, yeah, they really are. And she got even more excited because I had matched her world. After about 15 minutes, she finally said to me, she said, you know, Tony, I've always respected you and I've always loved you. And a lot of times, you know, you've brought up proposals and I knew you were right about them, but I just couldn't let you have your way. I think it was the way you said it. Notice the word said. She said, I really respect you. She said, but just the way you talked about things made it hard for me. She said, but right now I got to tell you, I feel so close to you. And so she'd entered a kinesthetic place. I responded back by saying, well, Marilyn, I really feel that that's true. And I feel like if we could just continue to talk this way, we could continue to feel this way about each other. She said, yeah. And we had this tremendous level of rapport. And from that day forward, all I had to do was talk more with this tonality and slow myself down. Of course, if I got real inspired, I'd get into visual and I could immediately see the effect because all of a sudden she'd be holding up her cross in front of me. But the point is that if you will enter people's worlds, you can do it on the telephone, you can do it in person, you will develop a bond of rapport that allows you to work together to produce results that you could never produce by yourself. Human beings are the greatest resource we have. It's one of the reasons we're here on the planet, to connect. Now you know how to do it with a stranger in moments, instantaneously, and you know what the results are going to be. You don't even have to speak the person's language. You can always speak their external language, their body language, and their tonality language to produce this bond called rapport. One more thing. We talked in the beginning of these tapes about the 7 character traits of a champion. One of them was bonding power. I'm curious if you've noticed anything about people who succeed on a large scale. That thing that I would hope you would notice is that there's an extreme balance between visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. For example, let's take a look at politics for a moment.
Let's look at politics. How many of you, for example, thought that Walter Mondale was an attractive man visually? Let me see your hands. Really, you did, huh? Compared to Reagan, you thought he was attractive? Okay. Interesting. Out of about 1,000 people, I'll usually get one person that thinks Mondale's an attractive man visually. And by the way, during the campaign, I got almost no one. Yeah, but since he's been gone a while, people have new pictures in their mind of what he looked like. Now, how many of you think for his age that Ronald Reagan is an attractive man visually? Let me see a show of hands. Let me get about 80, 90%. How many of you felt like Walter Mondale had an attractive tone of voice? Nobody raised their hand that one. I get a little bit of a chuckle. How many of you think that Ronnie Reagan has an attractive tone of voice, whether you like his policy or not? Got about 90%. How many of you feel like Walter Mondale could like really move you emotionally? Not a hand. Lots of laughter on that one. I get about one hand out of every 3,000. Let's say one person out of 3,000 say they were moved emotionally by Mondale. How many of you feel like, whether you like him or not, that Reagan, with feelings of patriotism and so forth, is able to move you emotionally? Let me see a show of hands. So Reagan gets 90% on visual, auditory, and kinesthetic usually, and Mondale gets 0 on visual usually, 0 on auditory, and minus 10 on kinesthetic. Okay, what was his chances of winning no matter what issue he fought for, no matter how right or wrong he may be? 0. I mean, he barely pulled his own state. I could have told you that in advance. The state he grew up in, barely pulled that one off. He didn't stand a chance. Why? He was ugly, didn't sound good, couldn't move anybody emotionally. Now, let's look at his running mate. How about Ferraro? How many of you feel like Geraldine Ferraro is an attractive woman visually? Raise your hand. She usually gets about 40, 50%. She does here as well. How many feel like she had an attractive tone of voice?
Not at first, but she did.
Okay, keep your hands up so I can see. This is amazing. One, two, three, four. Four. Usually out of 1,000, I'll get one hand. In New York City, the ratio is much higher. In New York City. And that's probably because you hear lots of different tonalities here, some of which are not the most soft in the world. Now, what about kinesthetically? How many people feel like Geraldine Ferraro could like really move you emotionally? Wow, that's amazing. One, two, three, four. Same four people. Okay. So that's four out of about 80, so that's about 6, 7, 8%. Usually, once again, on emotionally, we get almost nobody. Out of a couple thousand, we get a hand. Now, let me ask you a question. A lot of people say, well, she didn't win because she was a woman. I'm not willing to buy into that. I'm sure some men in the world probably voted against her because she's a woman. But I'll tell you why people didn't vote against her. It wasn't because she looked bad. It's because how many of you felt like her tonality irritated you? Let me see a show of hands. Raise your hand nice and high. Look at this. Even in New York City, we have about 80% of the people who feel like the tonality irritates them. And in New York City, you do hear a lot of tonalities that people in other parts of the country would not put up with. It's just part of this culture here. Okay? And 80% of you are irritated. Usually it's about 90% anywhere else I go. They're irritated every time she opens her mouth. And so if you look at this, here's a woman who irritates most of the people she speaks to just by her tonality alone. She can't move them emotionally. She's okay visually. And her running mate is Mondale. If that wasn't enough, I'll tell you the final thing that wiped her out. Incongruency. You want to see it get wiped out in politics fast. Be incongruent. She was incongruent about abortion. She was incongruent about her husband's finances. She was incongruent about first strike nuclear attack. That was the one that blew me away. Did you read that when it happened? She was at a high school, and a high school student asked her, he said, what do you think of the possibility of, you know, a first strike nuclear attack? And she said, well, I think in some cases it would be advantageous. Wow, the reporters there went crazy. Right? They said, that's totally against the party line, everything else, right? How could you possibly say that? And she said, I guess because a high school student asked me the question, I got confused. Yeah, that was reported by AP across the nation. People all over the nation are going, God, if a high school student can confuse her, don't let Cherninko get a hold of her. You know, total incongruency. That'll cost you real quick. How many of you, whether you like him or not, feel like Ronald Reagan is congruent, at least he believes what he says? How many believe that? That's why he's there. After a guy like Nixon, congruency is a major commodity in America. Now, what does this teach us? Well, let's just go one step further. How many of you think of a modern history president who you felt had a lot of power, charisma, could make a difference, was incredibly strong? How many of you thought of John F. Kennedy? Raise your hand. Look around the room. Anybody think of anyone else? Who'd you think of?
FDR.
Okay. So we got one person who thinks of someone from a different era, FDR. Everyone else in the room thought of one man, John F. Kennedy. How come? How many thought John F. Kennedy was an attractive man visually? Raise your hand. Anybody not think he was attractive visually? He gets 100% of the visuals. How many of you thought he had an attractive tone of voice? Raise your hand. Attractive tone of voice. Anybody not like his tone of voice? Raise your hand. So he's got one, two, three, four. So he gets about 96% of the auditory. He gets 100% of the visuals. How many of you felt like with phrases like, don't ask what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country? How many felt he could move you emotionally? Let me see a show of hands. Anybody not moved emotionally by Kennedy? Anyone at all? So he gets 100% of the visuals, 100% of the kinesthetics, and 96 or 97% of the auditories. And by the way, how many felt he was very congruent? Yeah, in fact, one person said, right, that it was him, Khrushchev, and the missile crisis, and his congruency is what made the difference. Right? Congruency is it. So here's a man who's attracted visually, auditorily, and kinesthetically to almost everyone, and he's congruent. Is there any doubt why he go down in history as one of our great presidents? And they say, well, he also got shot, and that's why. That's not true. Was he not this popular when he was alive?
Yes.
You bet he was. And was he only popular in this country?
No,
he's popular in all the countries of the world, practically, because what? He was attractive. Their auditory, he was auditory. Their visual, he was visual. He was kinesthetic, he was kinesthetic. And he was congruent. So the lesson I want you to take from this is that what you want to be is you don't want to go around leaving here saying, well, I'm a visual, I'm an auditory, I'm a kinesthetic. No, you're not. You're a VAC. You're a visual, auditory, kinesthetic person. And the more you work at that, the more balanced you become. If you want to be a great movie star, you want to make great music, you want to be a great politician, you want to be a great business leader, if you want to do something where thousands of people will listen, follow, support, whatever it is you do, then you need to be attractive visually, auditorily, and kinesthetically all at once. And you need to be congruent. And that's the reality.